See what's on.
Okay.
Flip around.
All right.
Thunder and
an amazing new feature of the entertainer makes a sound like an example of one finger melody.
That's
over.
You got to hit with him. Not now, Angel.
I'm an who has to.
Oh, wait, this is good.
Yeah. Oh.
What?
It's not coming in good. I'm going to try UHF. Hello?
Yeah, I was just wondering why there's nothing ever on.
This is a terrible time to call. You know, I'm right in the middle of
every time
stuff.
We go to look for
Lou, I can't hear the show.
But I gotta
going to talk. Shut off the
TV. Run.
If you're going to talk,
okay.
Shut off the TV.
We're going to have to make this a
What I was saying is, why is there nothing ever on?
Wearing a hat, a shirt, pants, and shoes. Heidi White explores the fields around his home every morning.
Not sure what I'm looking for, but pretty sure I'll recognize it when I find it.
Every once in a while, he produces a small white handkerchief from his pocket and wipes his nose. Life hasn't been easy.
Life hasn't been easy. Well, that's not true. Life has been easy. But if I knew what I was looking for out here, I think it'd be even easier.
The loading docks of SuperNIF are a different story. Here, Lou Register and his co-workers spend long hours lifting boxes and putting boxes back down.
My given name is Lewis, but my co-workers call me Lou because it's shorter, and sometimes you gotta get someone's attention if a box is falling or something. So for instance, we got a guy named Walter, but if you need his attention quickly to warn him about something, we just go, "Wah!"
I honestly would rather ride in silence.
It's weird hearing your own voice on the radio, isn't it?
I don't know why I even give those interviews. There's nothing in it for me. They're just using me as content. I always think they want to speak to me because I'm interesting or something, but they're just mocking me. Never speak to the media unless you're promoting something. Then it's invaluable.
We should start our own radio show.
Okay, very funny. I'll shut up.
Oh, I know. It's all very confusing. We've internalized the best and worst of mass media techniques and rules, and we willingly self-exploit.
So how do we break away from the deeply embedded expectations that the audience has and speak more authentically?
You may notice that there is a certain conformity among all the shows that you hear on radio or television or movies or things like that, because there are rules, both written and unwritten, about how to do certain media so that you attract the biggest audience possible. And so people learn these rules and apply them so that they can get the most people to look or listen to their thing. And so that attention can be turned into money. Commodify. I said money. I meant money. I choked on the word money. I hope you choke on money. I wish that on my enemies. I said, please choke on money is the curse that I put on my enemies. No, it's not. Oh, my goodness. I don't want you to do that. Then one Hanukkah, they're eating a piece of geld.
It literally happened.
No, my goodness. Oh, my friends, you will not find such conformity here. I'm not capable of it because of my diminished capacity for reason and things like that. However, I do offer something up that might be useful to some. And what is popularity? Is it particularly important? If you have ever sold a house, you know that you were probably encouraged by your real estate agent to paint the house, both interior and exterior, in some muted neutral colors, perhaps earth tones. The reasoning being that people like that. Most people like that. And that any bright colors or creative painting or anything will alienate a potential buyer. So you have to make it as palatable as possible. What's something that everybody likes? Oh, I don't know, water, or what's that stuff that people have, pablum? People love pablum.
I don't know. So you want to paint it that color so people buy it. Isn't that interesting? Make it as uninteresting as possible, and the most people will like it. That's if you're trying to turn something into money. What if you just want it to give you joy?
Oh, that's different. But you want to turn everything into money, don't you?
Kind of. I don't know. I'm not sure. A guy who owned a restaurant called a consultant one time, and he said, I need to make more money in my restaurant. Please look at my menu. And the consultant looked at the menu, and he said, what do you sell the least of? And he said, well, we sell the least of our vegan banh mi. It's tempeh banh mi. It's very, very good. But we sell the fewest of it, but the people who eat it love it. Well, what do you sell the most of? Our grease burger. It's a really big seller. A lot of people like it. A lot of people eat grease burger. And so the consultant says, you know what you need to do is make the fish sandwich more like the grease burger. Why don't you make it a sort of burger? And the restaurant owner said, well, it won't be a fish sandwich. And the consultant says, I know. You want to sell more of it. Yes, but then it isn't the thing that it began. Well, that thing isn't selling very much, but what about the people that ate it and liked it? Well, they're just going to have to eat a hamburger. But they can't eat. Oh, what are we going to do? A lot of times they'll have tolerance for this. Say it's a niche. You are serving a niche. You're just serving your niece. I want to have a restaurant where the only customer is my niece. And she lives in, like, Colorado or something, so I'm off to wait. She's so sweet. I can't wait till my niece comes in. But she's my only customer. If you take something and you want to make it more popular, you might change it into something it isn't. And I know that radio and TV have to have rules or nobody would listen to it. It'd be things that are unlistenable on radio and television. And there are. And there are ways of holding people's attention or alienate them. And we do push the boundaries on the radio, especially stations like this. And I was recently listening to a college station, and there was some students on there just talking. And it was, it wasn't very professional. And they weren't really saying anything. They were just kind of chatting about their own lives. And so that breaks all the rules. And I'm not saying it was particularly good radio, but I'm saying I didn't tune out. I kept listening. In the same way that I'll listen into a conversation in the next booth at a restaurant. Because it tells me something. It informs me about something. And I can't turn it into money. There's no way to turn it into money. So I can't force them to be interesting or tell interesting stories or maybe change the dynamics of their voice. But the performance that they're inadvertently putting on right now is interesting to me. And I can go around and listen to that in a lot of places. So I know that people are afraid to break rules in different... Here's why. I'll tell you why. Because they have to sell things. But I'm telling you this, my friend. You know, if books were like the hamburger and the fish, if books were toilet paper, they'd sell like hotcakes. Right? Think about it. You don't want to change something that some of us really need, do you? Oh, I hope that you need this. I'm trying to offer you something. I never know what to give to people who are hungry because I don't know exactly how hungry they are. Would I be insulting you if I gave you just fudgies? No. Well, you know, in a pinch, fudgies can sustain life. Here's my fudgy to you. I offer it up to you. I'm going to go around symbolically to my whole neighborhood and bring little pieces of candy to everyone and say, I wish you sustenance. And they'll say, get out of here. And I'll say, oh, I'm very sorry. I didn't mean to be trespassing. Forgive me my trespasses as I forgive those who do terrible TV or radio or movies or something like that. But if they think it can make money, sometimes you get an idea. And you think, I think this one is a moneymaker because this is going to appeal to everybody. What is it? What's something that everybody needs? Well, I don't know. Water. Water, exactly. So let's withhold it from them and sell it back to them, and everybody will have to get it. That's beautiful. That is the most perfect business idea in the world. And I think someday we will live in a world where the most perfect business idea has been realized. And we will take the one thing that's common to all of us, the thing
with which no creature can do without. No creature like us, I'm sure some can, tardigrade. Water, and all you have to do is limit the access and charge people for it. And then there you go. Well, now some will perish, I admit. But maybe they can have something like Vegemite or something that's sort of like, I don't know, there's probably moisture in it. It's not popular, but they could live off of it. Not all of us can have water. Yes, I believe water for all. Oh, and I'd like to tell you something else that I believe from the bottom of my heart. And it's about radio and television and entertainment and everything that you will experience. You know, some of it could come from you. It doesn't have to come from the outside. You can create it. You can make it. Don't let them intimidate you. Your art doesn't have to be on television or radio, or not everything has to be a podcast. You can just go talk with your friends. It doesn't even have to be recorded. You can make art. You can make plays that no one sees. You can make a play that only five people see. You can do a painting that no one sees but you and your friends. Not everything has to be for the masses. What are the masses? Oh my goodness, if I had to get everybody to like a thing, I would have to change that thing. I'd have to make that thing basically an illusion so that everybody sees what they want to see. Everybody sees the thing they love the most. And so what I hold up in front of them is a mirror, because I am a sort of reverse Morris Day. No, it's a two-sided mirror. Have you ever seen one of those? So I'm holding up the mirror so you can see yourself in it. But then my side's a mirror too. So you look like me. I look like you. And there is no I thou. There's just a I. Oh, my friends, I'd like to give you some advice now about how do you hold people's attention? Well, I say you speak to them. They'll look at you a while out of curiosity and to examine whether you're a threat or something. So if you're really speaking to someone in their presence, they'll probably watch you for just a little while to make sure that you're just giving an announcement or selling steak knives and not holding up the grocery store. All right? So if I was to walk in to Shop Shemp and I said, you know, greetings, everyone. This happens on subway cars, you know. May I have your attention? You will get everyone's attention, because for that instant, they don't know, are we going about to be killed or are we about to be sold a veggie slicer? And then after some of the people, when they determine it's not a threat, will leave. Others say, well, you know, I need a veggie slicer. And then they'll watch for a while. But if that veggie slicer salesman does, and if that's indeed what it is and not a threat, if that veggie slicer salesman doesn't keep their attention, he's not going to sell any of them. So he's got to do things too. What's he going to do? Every once in a while, he should yell, fire or help. No, that wouldn't do it. No, he's already used that technique. He must use another technique. Now that he's got their attention, he's got to bring them in. I've got the hook is on a little bit. The hook is there. They've seen the bait. They've come to it. Now I got to like get it in there, got to get them to bite it, and then I got to set the hook. How do I do that? I got to make them feel maybe that they already have this thing, that their life is already better because of this great veggie slicer. Imagine, if you will, you're at home. All right, now you see people cook great things, and you see these perfect slices of carrots. Now you might not even bother to cook because you can't make something like that, but what if I told you how easy it was? Look at this. Look how easy that is. Now, people are going to come over. They'll think you work for hours on this. It's not just this vegetable. Look at the vegetables I can make. Now, why do you want to go out to restaurants, pay $25, okay, for a meal? For $25 and this, I can make a meal for 8 people that'll look better than any restaurant meal. That's $500 I saved. Now, don't let... keep moving on, because he won't be able to do the math if you're yelling at him. It's like, you know, don't you want that life? And that person will start imagining that. I can see it now. I close my eyes and I see my life with this wonderful veggie slicer. That could be me. And the hook is set and you're brought in and you're drawn in now. And you say, I've got my wallet out. Now, to whom do I give my money? Now you got to make it easy. You got to make it easy for them to get there. Say, oh, just give me the card and you can go on and do your shopping.
That's the way I feel. I know I've got nothing to sell you. I get your attention, and I tell you I'm not selling anything. Some of you will still come up to the table because you're looking for a story. And that's fantastic.
Come on up. There's no knives for sale. No knives for sale. Nothing here to cut. Nothing to cut with. Come on, my friend. I just want to say some ordinary things. You'll learn something today. But it's ordinary.
It is going to be ordinary, but you might still be able to use that thing. That little bit of information, maybe. Or maybe you just found out about something. Maybe I'm just confirming a wonderful bigotry. That'd be lovely if I was just saying, oh, I knew that I hated him and people like that, and now listening to this has confirmed it. Oh, I'm so thankful that I was able to give you a little something, and you're still listening. If you're still listening, not shame on you. Certainly your responsibility. Oh, my friends, I'm going to paint my house, my interior, whatever I want to. And when I go to sell it, if you can't picture in your mind how that wall looks painted with in tan, I don't know what to say. I'm so sorry, it's purple. Just close your eyes and imagine it's tan. And that's what it'll be like. But I mean, why, when you move in, don't you want to paint it the colors you want anyway? Don't you want to make the place yours anyway? Everybody's going to decorate their little place and make it just like theirs, just like they like it. So when I bring something, like I go on the radio, say, so what's your aesthetic? Is it a cluttered aesthetic? It's one thing. I just have one thing in the room. It's just one thing. It's just a chattering head. Imagine walking into an empty room, and in the middle of that room, it looks like there's a severed head. And you go, oh my gosh, there's a severed head. And you walk around, you just see the back of the head. So you walk around to where the face is, and you see the face, and it's just chattering like that. The severed head is on the floor, but it's alive. It's animated, and it's going, wah, 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 wah. That's me. That's me, a chattering severed head on the floor. What do you think of that? How long can you stare at it? Well, is something else going to happen? I mean, I think flowers should fly out of its top of its head. Then that'd be interesting to me. Well, I'm sorry. If you're not entertained or you're not interested in a disembodied chattering head on an empty floor in a strange room of a house, and you don't know how you got to that house. Is it a house? Are you dreaming? There's so many things to figure out. But you're waiting for flowers to come out of the head. Come on now. Oh, my friends. Oh, I think you should see all your interactions with others. It's a sort of radio show. Next time that you just have an ordinary discussion with a friend, imagine that thousands of people are listening. No, don't do that. Because you would tailor what you're saying, wouldn't you? It'd be really hard to be yourself. Whenever there's others involved, we feel the strong power of their gaze. We feel them listening and making judgments, even if they're benign. Even if the judgment is, I like that, or that makes me laugh, the things you say are being evaluated and judged. You are changing and being molded in the opinion of others. You are a sort of clay, and the gaze of others is molding that clay into some image for which you are only partially responsible. And if you try to control what that image is, you will become insane. If you try to control the way that others see you, and if you try to control their opinions, if you try to keep people liking you when you don't even know them, you will become insane. You have no control. You don't know the eyes with which you are being looked at which you are looking up with. Shall we not put this up? Said Churchill. No, sir, we shall not. And we shall meet this aggression on the shores with tears of toast. I don't know what that means, but I remember that's something that he said. And I think he meant marmalade when he said tears. Or maybe the toast is the part that he didn't mean to say. I don't know. I can't get in his head. I can't get in the head of any prime ministers, much less presidents. I'm often asked, who is my favorite president? And, gosh, I guess I would say Lee Iacocca, who was president of, no, he's not anywhere near my favorite one. I don't know. That's hard. President of what, though? I should ask that. President of what? What is my favorite what? What do you mean by favorite? What do you mean by favorite president? I want to have a podcast called What Do You Mean By Favorite President?
Well, that seems a little narrow.
Can you sustain that for weeks? Why would I want to sustain it for weeks? I'll just do it. If it takes 10 minutes, I'm done. That's great. I'll move on to something else. Can you sustain it? I don't know. No. Can anything be sustained? No, that's why all series deteriorate into something odd and strange, because they enter a feedback portion. Have you ever watched it? It's the catamorphology, is that the right word, of a TV series. You know, it starts out, you have an original episode, and it's a story, original characters and everything. And then maybe you have another episode, and they go and they do something else, right? And then a couple other episodes. And then maybe other people start writing the episode. So they have to sort of internalize those characters. So those characters are now whatever they were in that story, plus this person writing. All right? So they start to add, and now all these things have happened, and the characters have done certain things in the past, and you can't pretend they didn't happen. So it starts feeding back, and those things in the past start to define the future until it gets all weird. You run out of things to do with the characters, and all of a sudden Fonzie's leaping over a shark in a motorcycle. It's inevitable, and everything goes to hell. It always happens. It never doesn't happen, because the farther you get away from the original creation, the less likely people are to take real risks with things. And when they don't take real risks, then evolution kicks in. And you say, you put too many eggs in one basket. I see you put zero in this other basket. Yes, that's correct. Well, it turns out this other basket is what we're going with. Oh, I have no eggs in that one. That's why I always invest in an index fund. You put all your money in a tobacco stock. If you had put it in an index fund, at least, or a mutual fund, you will spread out the risk. You spread out the risk. That's how you do it. And you spread out the risk most by being yourself. By being, who's that? I don't know, man. I guess you just spread out the risk by taking risk all the time. All the time. Live on risk, dance on risk, surf on a risk. Go on, take it on. It's all risky. There's no safety. The safety is false. Keep moving. Keep growing. Keep exploring. Do whatever you want. Say it. Say it. Say it out loud. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to break this rule. I'm sorry. I may lose your attention for a minute. I'm sorry. But what if in this great experiment something does come out of it? And something pops up out of it, and I would have ignored it. Because I thought, no, I'm not going to look. Look at that little owl. He's not going to be able to sing well. Drink to me only with a... Get out of here, little tiny owl. No, listen to this. I like singing. By the moon and June, the singer. Whoa, that's fantastic. Right? Enough is too much. Oh, let that heart sing. Take that risk. It wants to burst out there. Don't think about this thing's confined. Well, it doesn't make money. Oh, do it anyway. Do it. I know you're bursting with ideas. I really don't feel not everything has to be, have a huge audience. Not everything has to be a lead to something else. You know what I'm saying? Where are you going after the radio show you're doing on this station? Nowhere. You have any plans? No. Have any ambitions? I really don't. Why is that? I don't know. I think it's because I've found so much pleasure in ordinary things and my ordinary relationships. I no longer look to sort of some validation by strangers as a way of feeling good about myself. I feel good about myself because I have good relations with my friends and neighbors, which I've worked at hard. And that's what I'm proud of. And anything I do or make or something like that, you know, I want it to bring joy and everything, but
I have very little control over those things, and I don't want to lose my mind trying to manage my image in the eyes of others. How can I tell the truth if I'm always trying to anticipate what people want to hear? That's it. And I don't think there's a should. I hope I never say things that you should.
This is what you should do, or you should hear. You should be listening to Hardy. You should do what you want. I don't care. Oh, bless you. I'll be here to help you move, though.
I didn't know you were moving. I'm out here alone in the wilderness. All by myself. Alone. In the wilderness. In a way, it's frightening. There are sounds I don't recognize. There are threats everywhere, but it's also very liberating. I'm not responsible for anybody but myself, and even myself I don't feel entirely responsible for if I live or die. There's no pressure. I haven't failed. Not out here. Not out here in the wilderness. There are no eyes on me. No one here to say, good job, or you've let me down. No, it's just me and strange sounds and the wind through the trees and the distant moaning of some sort of vertebrate, and I hope it's about the same size as I and not larger. And if it is larger, that it's an herbivore. And that I don't look like an herb. What herb would I be? If you were an herb, I was going to... Sorry. What was that? What was that? Is that a person or a moose? Something but like Bullwinkle is a sort of a hybrid, isn't he? He's sort of like a person, and he's also like a moose. And I think that's why he does things like has a cake recipe when they... What happened there in that episode? I don't remember exactly. Also, what is that? There's so much out here that I don't recognize. Everything that I listen to is new. Is it entertaining? Is it informative? Out here, those words don't apply, really. All information is useful to me out here. Being entertained, being informed, it all blurs together. Out here, it's just experience, and experience helps you anticipate things a little bit so you can avoid some of the pitfalls. Like when I first got out here, I was running from a moose, and I fell into a big crevasse and perished in there. But then, because I'm living in a reality that's like a video game. When I got my next life, I think I got 3 or 4. I didn't make that mistake again. No siree. I don't know what I'm going to do out here by myself. What can I do to entertain myself? Well, I don't have to entertain myself. I'll let other things entertain me. I will let the sunrise and the sunset and the wind through the trees and that strange noise in the distance that, again, I hope is some sort of large hoofed mammal. That's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is it is a lizard being about my size wearing a vest. And looking for some kind of fight. And they're from another planet. That's hence the vest. I'm not really in the wilderness, and yet I am. Everywhere I am is a sort of wilderness. I feel safe in this little house, my little house cave, and on the walls are the equivalent of caveman paintings, except they're portraits of people, like right there. I got a couple Doctor Who's on the wall that say, you know, to Hardy, love, and this one says number 6, because that's who that is. Those are the things I have on my walls. And why? To make myself feel alive, to remind me of things that I've experienced when I see that picture right there. I think, hey, I remember that I was at a Comic-Con and Doctor Who was there. And I'll never forget that now. And I'm sure that my ancestors
look at their walls and think, I remember that. That's the buffalo that I heard moaning in the distance. And now I've drawn him on the wall. And that's a way of making sense of my universe a bit. That's a way of controlling my world just a little bit. If I can take those things that I'm afraid of or that I don't understand and I can reduce them to a little painting, a little drawing, or a radio show or something like that, or a play, I have a little more control, a little more understanding. I feel a little less in the wilderness and more of the wilderness. I belong here too. And when the moose hears me doing this, when he hears me bellowing in the distance, he says, that's Hardy Wye preaching in the wilderness. I hear Hardy Wye preaching in the wilderness, even though I'm a moose. And for a second, I give a little moose pause because I don't want that thing to be a giant lizard being that's going to come eat me. Oh, no. Then my days of stealing things from Moosylvania or dropping ping pong balls on Captain Kangaroo, who I almost called Dr. Kangaroo. And he might have gone back to, some of these celebrities will go back to school and get PhDs. Some of them have honorary PhDs, like Mike Douglas. And other people have actually earned PhDs. Can you think of anybody? I think Lucille Ball was Dr. Lucille Ball. A lot of people don't realize that. I don't know if that's true. Doesn't have to be. Does it have to be true? Doesn't have to be. It's. I think that happened. I think it happened. I remember hearing it somewhere. If it didn't, perhaps we were living in an alternate reality. Oh, I like that explanation. Okay, that's it. Not just that memory is fragile. If you realized how fragile your memory is, I don't think you'd ever take it out of the box. You would never unwrap it. You'd say, I got to put some bubble wrap around this and I got to go put it in the strong box. Nay, the safety deposit box. Is it safe deposit box or safety deposit box? I was raised by people who said everything wrong. And now, I mean, is it my fault? Is it my fault that I'm saying things the way that my parents taught me? And you say, no, that's wrong. I said, well, then I was taught wrong. And they say, well, you were taught wrong. And I say, well, answer me this. I was taught to respect and honor my parents and to believe them. And I did. Was that wrong? Yes, you shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have believed them. No. All right. Well, now I'm going to hit you in the mouth with a brick because they also said, don't do that. Well, no, they were right in that instance. Well, how do I know when they were right and when they were wrong? What do I do? What do I make of my inheritance? I cannot take my moral inheritance to the Antiques Roadshow and ask some twin brothers, what do you think this is worth? What do you think this is worth? This is something that I was given, that I inherited. It is the idea that all people are created equal. It is the idea that we are all siblings. It is the idea that all creatures on this earth feel pain and suffer. It is the idea that we are connected so intimately that what I do to you, I ultimately do to myself. It is this idea. Are you telling me that that is worthless? Because just because I clean the patina off just because I cleaned it. It was a mess. And you go, yes, you've taken some of the surface off of it and now it's not worth as much. Well, it's worth something to me. And you know, you could tell me it's worth this or that. I'm not going to sell it. So how much is something worth if it can never be sold? So you could say, I could hold this diamond in my hand. So even though it's price may be incalculable, it still has one. But can you sell something? Can you sell a mountain? Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, you can. people buy them and then disassemble them, which is remarkable to me. I used to think you couldn't even buy one. And not only can you buy a mountain, but you can remove it. And that's what we do around where I live, is it's just somebody bought that mountain because it's not there anymore. Oh, isn't that interesting? That's something. I hope nobody buys that lake. I guess they could. They could drain it. In Tallahassee, Florida, where I lived a great chunk of my adult life, there's a lake there, Lake Jackson. I think it's named after a friend's son, because he also, his name's Jackson. And they live near there, so that could be. The lake disappears every once in a while. Sometimes it's a great fishing lake and it's a big old lake and you take a boat out there and other times you come back and you go, where's the lake? And your lake's gone. What happened? There's like a drain or something. It just goes back into the ground. Isn't that interesting? So the lake's not there always. Sometimes it's not a lake. What are you saying? What is that? I feel like you're pointing towards something, a bigger idea. I am and I'm not. It's something that popped into my head, and I always thought that was the disappearing lake was interesting because it is also a Alfred Hitchcock mystery for children. The three detectives, mystery of the missing lake. And it comes between the green ghost and the mystery of the pearl necklace, I believe. It's right in there. Oh, we are all sorts of detectives, aren't we? Let's start a detective agency right now. Okay, let's start a detective agency. Do you want to be the, can we both be detectives? I guess we can. I mean, I'm going to go to the doctors. There's like three doctors. They share a receptionist, right? But they're all in, you want to do like that? Or do you want a partner? How do you want to do this? Do you want to be like a medical group kind of thing where we're detectives in the same office? Or you want to work together as detectives like we're a team? Can you name a detective team? Burns and Allen. I don't think that's one. That's a comedy team. Name another one. Sherlock Holmes and his friend. Yes, Dr. Watson. Yes, they're a team. They're sort of a team. I don't know if they're even. The Snoop Sisters. They're more of a team, probably. Who's the head Snoop Sister? I don't know. Do you want to be like that? More like co-equal? Yeah, okay. All right, let's do that. And what do you want to call our detective agency? You know what? I'm already bored with the idea, so let's move on to something else. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being inconsistent. I'm going to read a letter. I get a lot of letters from listeners, and they're always email. So I'm just going to open this crumpled piece of drawing paper and act like it's a letter. And then I'm going to read it. Dear Hardy, I feel a lot of pressure to be consistent. I'm just going to say police officer. Here it says United States Senator. I am a police officer and enjoy my job. However, I've always wanted to make cheese and would like to switch professions, but I'm afraid I'll be made fun of for leaving the profession of the police and go and become a cheese person. But this has always been my dream. What do I do? I don't know. I said, when I write back, I say, I don't know. I think you just want me to tell you. Like, why don't you just flip a coin or something like that? I don't know. Does it matter what you do? Can you make cheese? I'll tell you what. Why don't you switch professions, make cheese? If you miss policing, just do a little of that as a hobby. So I'm going to be a cheesemaker, but then in my spare time, I think what I'll do is I'll be a law enforcement, just an amateur law enforcement. I don't know if that's a thing. Is that okay? Can people do that? Is that what being a detective is? I thought as a child, because there's so many detective stories, and think about why that would be. Why are there? Why is it a genre that we're interested in? What is it about being detective? What are you looking for? Why do we want to watch a show about someone looking for something? Isn't that frustrating? Something being solved. Why has everything come back to being a detective? Signed, a listener. Well, I don't know. That's an interesting letter, and I lost track of it because was I making it up? It's hard to tell. It is really hard to tell. Often I have gone on the radio, and I have spoken to my friends and told a story. Often those stories are written out. Sometimes they are not. Whether or not I write out an idea and am reading it to you, or whether I am speaking to you off the top of my head, is irrelevant. I'm still telling you something. I am still sharing something with you. And whether I am composing it right now or I can post it earlier in the day is not important. What is important is that you are hearing it. Every time that we write something down, we make it more permanent. Every time we remember something, we observe something and make a record of it in our brains, we are making it permanent. So whether or not I have composed something and edited it before I speak it to you, or whether I am deciding right now what is the best thing to say,
is just about the... I don't have a word for it. It's just about the least... Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Do you ever watch these talk shows? Have you seen these? Have you seen the talk shows? And the people come out and they have discussions. Now, when I was a young person, I'd say, oh, this came out and they started talking to Johnny Carson. They're just having a little chat. It's wonderful. But it turns out that before these guests come out, they've already had a number of chats with a underling. And what an underling is, it's sort of like a hobbit. They're very, very tiny. And they work in television. And they'll come in and you don't see them and they startle you and they're very, very small. So I thought you were a tiny little jar of Spice Island pepper flakes. So no, I'm a human being and I'm here to ask you some questions and to ascertain whether you have any anecdotes that would be appropriate for television. And they speak to that person and they say, that's great. Now, when you go out and you see Johnny, I want you to tell the anecdote about thinking that a jar of spices was a tiny little person. All right, you think that'll work? I think it will. And so they go out and they have a conversation that is anything but spontaneous. So you don't know whether you're watching something that's a play or whether it's real life. And now we live in an age where there's barely any difference between a play and real life because all of life has been taken and cut up and made permanent and sprayed with some sort of lacquer so that it may be hung in a gallery and sold or put on the shelf of a store and sold. Everything has been commodified and therefore everything is being evaluated by the rules of commerce. The Commerce Bank of Beverly Hills was a fictional business on the show The Beverly Hillbillies, and it was run by a very avaricious banker named Mr. Drysdale. Mr. Drysdale. It was just like, think of the name. He takes a dale and he makes it dry. I don't get it. I don't know if that's intended. I think it's just a name. And he has this bank and everything and all of his relationships with these people, these humble people, he has to pretend to like them because he sees them all as money. All of them are potential earnings for him. Not just human beings, because if they were just poor people who lived in a cabin who had nothing, well, what would they be to him? Why would he even need them? They're unsophisticated. He has his lovely wife, who's, I don't know what's going on, his lovely son, Louis Nye, who's strangely close to his age. And yet he's greedy. Would you be friends with the Beverly Hillbillies if they weren't millionaires? That's the key. That's the key. Would you like something if other people didn't like it? Would you need something if other people didn't need it? Would you love something if others didn't love it? Oh, how can I make my eyes my own? If everything I've received from the past is a sort of lens through which I must look, can I make my own lenses? No, not really. You are trapped in your biology and you are trapped by history largely. Is there any wiggle room? I say this, let's wiggle and find out. That's how I find out whether it's free will. I try to test it. And I will never know, because I'll never really know why I did something, whether it was me or whether it was just a series of things that happened because something else happened. Causes. Am I doing it? Are you doing it? When I was a young boy, I always start things like that because it's the best way to start a lie. And the reason is because I misremember so much about my youth now that it's so wonderfully, it's like a template. My past is like a sourdough starter. And I just grab a little of it now, and I plop it anywhere, and I have a story. Because I'm going to fill in all the gaps in my memory with things that I've learned recently. Update it. Interpret my past. And lie to the present. That's what I'm bringing you. And so when I say to you, when I was a child, I'm really telling you something about what's happening to me now.
And what's happening to me now, frankly, is I'm reaching a point in my life where it's my ambitions to, I think, to other people would seem silly. Like I'm aiming really low. You know what I mean? But the older you do get, and this happens to young people too, you experience loss. People you love go away. Things you like change. Your body becomes less reliable to you. And the whole situation seems to take on some new rules as you get older. And in a way, it's very liberating because you don't have as much to worry about. And in a way, it's more worrisome because you feel like maybe you have less time to do it. But there's two ways to age, I believe, and that is to either understand finally that other people are going through these things, or to go and to live in some sort of self-delusion, to live in a past, to make it your future. I say, embrace confusion, embrace the strangeness, embrace the unknowing, embrace it. You don't know, we're all confused, we're all lost, we're all in the wilderness. You don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. Come on here, let's dance. Let's explore our hearts and our minds. Let's not close our eyes to possibilities. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can break out of this by doing something different. Let's see if we can expand our minds by throwing away the shackles of others' expectations. Right? Fail, fail spectacularly, fail now, fail. Be other, be different, be cast out. Fail, fail now, do it and fail. Succeeding is so common. Oh, be true, be real, let's do it. Just, I'm trying to learn to bake. And so far, I've had, everything is, there's no way to spin it. They have been failures because it's almost inedible. And I'm learning, and it's agonizing because there's so many steps. And with every mistake, I think I get closer. But, you know, if I was just looking forward to, and it was just about that cake at the end, if it was just about that bread in the end, I think I would have already jumped off a cliff. Because what is happening now is I am also enjoying the mistakes. I am enjoying just doing it. I am liking putting my hand in flour. I am liking playing with butter. It's all just fine to me. I don't mind it at all. And so here I go on my wonderful adventure, not knowing where I'm going, not caring necessarily. I'm not trying to provoke you, and I'm not trying to bore you. But I'm not trying to excite you, and I'm not trying to engage you necessarily. I am trying to give you a peek inside the home of a stranger. There are often in neighborhoods open houses. Someone's trying to sell their house, and they realize that if they just waited for people who are interested in buying a house to come see it, that they're going to get fewer people looking at it. And maybe, by inviting everybody in, even those who are just merely curious, they expand their reach, because those people may tell a friend or say, oh, I saw a nice house recently. Why don't you go look at it? And so they have these open houses. And I go in them just because I have endless curiosity about other people's living spaces. And pictures aren't enough because I have to smell them. I have to go in your house and smell your house. I have to smell your house. I have to go in there. I have to look around. I have to touch your house. I have to see your things. I have to see what you hang on your wall. I got to see what you walk on your floor. I want to see how you decorate it. I want to see the things on your shelf. I want to see what you can live with and what you can't live with. I want to see what you choose to paint the wall when you're not trying to sell it to somebody. I want to see what you like when you think nobody is watching. That's what I want to see. Will I? Your best bet is when it's the house of someone who's died. When it's an open house, sometimes they, you know, buy additional throw pillows, etc. But in this case,
I'm letting you into a house where nobody cares. I'm just letting you come in and look around. And oh, I forgot. I just put the coffee pot in the sink. I didn't even think to clean it or anything. I didn't even take the trash out. So there is a vague odor. But it's real. It's how people live. And what I'm saying to you and how I'm communicating to you is how people communicate, by and large. They just speak from their heart. And while they're doing it, they get excited or they get sad. They contradict themselves. They reveal their pride and their arrogance, but they also reveal their fear and their vulnerability because they're unguarded. And when you're unguarded, everything comes out. Everybody comes in. Don't be scared. Don't be scared. Your mind is like the tent of Father Abraham. And Father Abraham was a large figure. And by large, I don't mean physically large. I mean one of those people who just opened his arms and embraced everyone. Everyone's father. Come into my tent. I am unafraid of other human beings. Come into my tent. Come on in here. I'm not afraid. I want to see all of you in all your different forms. Some of you may need things. Some of you may want things from me. Some of you may have things that I want. Come on into my tent. Come on into the tent of Father Abraham. I embrace you. Come on in. That is your mind. Treat your mind like this. Bring it all in. Don't be afraid. Some things will take things from you, other will give it to you. But if you just all look, listen, do the same thing all the time, I'm telling you, break it up with things that annoy you. Break it up with things that challenge you. Break it up with things that bore you. Listen to conversations in restaurants. Don't expect everything to be polished and finished. Every beautiful painting won't necessarily have a frame on it. If Van Gogh's sunflowers didn't have a frame on it, would you still think it was a gorgeous picture? If all those things weren't hanging in a museum, would you still recognize them as art? If I were to show you a masterpiece in my garage, surrounded by the detritus of my life, the greasy and oily rags of my daily experience, would you still think that thing was a piece of art? Would you be able to recognize it out of context? Can you recognize the truth out of context? Can you recognize joy out of context? Can you take it where you find it? Can you go into the wilderness and spot the good mushrooms from the bad mushrooms? Can you go out there and gather your own? Do you have the guts to go into the woods and know what nuts and berries are edible and which ones will kill you? I guess you're just going to have to try. Take someone with you, like a little friend that you don't really like, and feed him the berries and see what happens. I do that with entertainment. You go see it and tell me about it, and then maybe I'll go see it. Yes, my friend. We're living in an age that I find, because of time travel, very similar to other ages, but people just don't think that because they're alive in this one, and they weren't alive. They're reading about the old ones, and they're experiencing this one. So they're always going to say, oh, this is a different, people are so different now. And no, not really. I mean, you know, it seems that way when you're kind of reading and everything, but I'm telling you, there just seems to me to be a constant proportion of crummy people and decent folk, you know, and that's because it isn't the people, it's the ideas that flow within our biology, it's the ideas that flow within our minds, it's what they're playing on the radio. It ain't radio, it's not radio, there's no bad radio, there's just bad radio shows. It's not the receiver that's the problem. It's what comes out of its speaker. That's the problem. Oh, my friends, sometimes I get too mellow. I have heard from listeners that sometimes my voice is so soothing to them they fall asleep and they don't listen to what I've said, and I don't care, because isn't it wonderful? Would I mind that someone is using my show, what they call off-label? So I'm not using it to be entertained. Oh, what are you using it for? I'm using it to lull me to sleep because I'm having trouble sleeping. That's wonderful. I don't mind.
What if Aunt B found out that her inedible pickles were actually the cure for cancer? Do you think she'd care? I don't care what you use it for. If you would rather, you know, I've made you this thing. It's a tea cozy. If you'd rather use it as a hat, go for it. That doesn't hurt my feelings at all. However you find it useful, because your idea of how to use it doesn't conform with mine, does not bother me in the least. Oh, you are all my friends. I'm so glad to be with you every week. It's remarkable that we get to do this on the radio. And that's because the endeavor that you're listening to, their finances operate in a different way. You see what I'm saying? So there's nobody selling something that's going to be annoyed that I'm making them look bad. You know what I mean? Like if there was a type of shrimp dinner or something, frozen shrimp dinner, and they were giving money to do all this, they would want to have a say. They say, there's a lot of things that you say, negative things about shrimp on the show, and we just don't think that's consistent with our business model. I know, I'm very sorry. How would you like to change the way that I, how would you like to change the truth that I am saying? Just tell me the truth that you would like me to speak, and I will speak that. No, can't do that. Got to speak my own truth. Not sure it's true. Just got to do it. Compelled to do it. Because I know that if I speak your truth, I may really be lying. So that's all, Nick. I love this. I can do it without fear of interfering with somebody else's obsession with their image. The only image I have to worry about is mine, and I don't. And I don't want you to have to worry about it either. The burden of not being yourself, the burden of not, and we don't all know who we are, right? It's weird, and I could get it, but to some degree that we do know who we are, and we do know there are certain things that we have to suppress because others would mock us or be intolerant or in some cases hate us or in some cases murder us. So it can't even be honest, forced into lies and silence. Can't do that. I feel like I'll explode. It feels like gas. I've got to pass it. I'm sorry. I know that's going to offend some. I won't do it in the elevator. I'll wait until we're in a big field, but then I'm going to let it rip. And what I'm going to let rip is this thing that's building up in me, this enthusiasm, the things that are in my mind, the things that I want to share with you, my emotions, my connection to you as a human being, and my love in my heart. It's coming out, and there's nothing I can do about it. Oh, I love you, fellow human being, and I understand that you're trying to do your best, and I understand that you're trying to please those around you, and those around you may not be so hot. And you may have to act and behave in ways that you know in your heart are not right. I'm saying, oh, find the courage to break away from that chain of oppression, that chain of misery, and step out into the light where we recognize the beauty and humanity of all. And step away from all that harsh judging that you have inherited. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, New York, and Rockland County, and online worldwide at WFMU.org. Thank you, my friends, so much for joining me, and I will see you again next week.